I dare you to leaf through Danielle Boulud's new cookbook without salivating. It's a combination memoir, instruction manual, and a glimpse into the kitchens of his restaurants and home where he makes magic with food each day. He's won more awards than I can list, including 3 James Beard Awards, and he's also a Chevalier de la Légion d'Honneur. The book is called Danielle, My French Cuisine. It also includes some essays by Bill Buford. And it's just out from Grand Central Publishing. And it is a joy to welcome Danielle Boulud back to our show. Hello.
Thank you, Leonard. I'm very honored to be sharing this moment with you.
Was there ever even a remote possibility that you might not want to become a chef?
No.
Was there anything else that you ever considered doing?
No, I think it's too late.
No, but when you were a kid, because I know food was always important in your life.
Yeah, but for me, food was what made me happy. And when I started at 14, I didn't know who I was going to be, what I was going to be. But by the time I was 15, I served my first French president. I was with the chef de cuisine of the restaurant I was working, and I was a commis, and then I was the apprentice. And the 3 of us had to do a lunch. And I had to have an official pass given by the government so I could enter the property and the kitchen.
Which French president was that?
Mitterrand. So you go.
He liked good food, too.
We talk about 1970. And I was like so impressed by me being nobody and having this official pass to go and cook for the president. Then I felt like this is amazing. And then in Lyon, I had the chance to work in this restaurant where we had an amazing clientele and we were doing catering outside, and I would go to the fancy houses and cook meal, but also in the restaurant. And Lyon was the Mecca of cooking, where really you had all the greatest chefs every morning going to the market and buying their food and being there, kicking your butt and pushing you around, and you know.
And why do you think Lyon? Because it is so close to one of the greatest wine regions of the world?
I think Lyon is in an enclave of between Burgundy and Rhone, and where they were really. It's a very rich region when it comes to food, come to wine, and it was also very active in industrial city. It was a little bit of the Detroit of France. But it kind of like fade off a little bit, and there's more technology now, and there's a little bit more. They are fantastic with the medicine research as well. But Lyon was a very disturbed city during the war because of the fact that there was occupation there. But then it was before the war and after the war, food was still an amazing topic. And maybe because also geographically, when you needed to go to the south of France, coming from the north, coming from England, Belgium, Germany, Switzerland, Paris, north of France, you had to go to Lyon through National Set. And this National Set was like almost like a necklace with a pearl in every little in every little rings, where there were a restaurant, a 2-star, a 1-star, a 3-star, a 2-star, a 1-star, and there was this concentration around Lyon because it was kind of the hub where you slept and where you eat.
And by the time you got out, you were fat. Well, you grew up on a farm, so the interest in food probably began there. But you say that it was important to have started off your career peeling carrots and potatoes.
Yes, and to have a sense.
I peel carrots and potatoes, and I still don't cook as well as you do.
Yeah, but you have to do the dirty job before you can access to sliced truffle, you know.
Do you consider yourself an American chef with a French soul or a French chef with an American soul? Because you've lived in New York City since 1982, which is over half your life.
Yes.
You have to go back to get your accent back up.
I don't know how to say that, but it's true. And I have been 3 decades in New York, and I think I'm definitely a French chef with an American soul. I don't think you can take the French out of me, but I don't think I would be the same person if I had stayed in France, for sure.
You worked with some incredible chefs, Gérard Nandron, then Paul Bocuse, who has written a lovely letter that's included in this book, mm-hmm. and Roger Verger.
And Michel Gérard and Georges Blanc.
So you probably learned something from working with all of them.
Every one of them was something very unique to learn. And not only I was attached by their style of cooking and the way they were referring their inspiration to the past and yet being very creative with the present, but also by each individual having a different approach in cooking. Michel Gérard was completely different than Paul Bocuse or Roger Verger.
Well, Paul Bocuse is all about extravagance, and
yeah,
Michel
but it's
Gérard
about
was
terroir.
All about very was just doing everything perfectly, but
he
not
was more poetic. I think Michel Gérard was more poetic. He also was the one who created Cuisine Minceur, and actually this year, just now, I had a conversation with him. And with his daughter, he just created a cooking school for a dietetic cooking school where it's basically how to combine haute cuisine and nutrition. And because he has always been fascinated by that, and it's accredited by the government, and it's really recognized as maybe it's going to be one of the finest nutritional and vocational school as well at the same time.
So you came here to the United States just looking for a job. Did you think that you would wind up settling in the United States?
Well, I arrived in Washington, D.C., and I was working at the embassy of the European Economic Community. And so that was my sabbatical. During that time, I had more vacation than I ever had in the 11 years of becoming a chef. But anyway, so I traveled California up and down. I traveled the Southwest, I traveled Florida, I went to the Midwest, and I discovered the country, and I also worked in D.C., but what really motivated me was a chef like Jean-Louis Paladin, for example, who was in D.C.
And at the Watergate.
He was at the Watergate Hotel, and he had a very small restaurant. He had maybe 25, 30 seats, but an amazing wine cellar, and the menu, he will write the menu every day himself. He will write the 8-course menu, and that's all he was serving.
I have to tell you, I had was lucky enough to have had a couple of meals there. Yeah. And that was one of the great culinary experiences of my life. But then you worked in New York, but it was when you were at Le Cirque that people started realizing that there was a guy named Daniel Boulou.
Yes, plus also I think the French restaurant at the time in the late 60s, no, the late, I would say, 70s, early 80s, they were still anchored in the old French style of cooking, more like with, you know, all the chefs who came from the cruise ship and kind of brought up a new generation of chef here, French chef. And Jean-Louis gave me the motivation and, you know, he was totally in sync with what was happening in France in terms of cuisine. And He really did that. And so for me, I told Jean-Louis, I say, I want to go to New York. And he sent me to New York. And after working at the Westbury Hotel and the Plaza Athénée, I was asked the same week to either by André Soltner to be the chef at the Lutèce or by Le Cirque to be the chef with Sergio Macioni. And I decided to go with Sergio because I felt that I will be the chef and Sergio will be the owner of the restaurant and we can maybe get along well.
Whereas André Soltner was a great chef in his
He
own,
was the
right?
chef in himself.
Well, you wound up even introducing new dishes. And in this new book, you mm-hmm. include a recipe that you developed when you were executive chef at Le Cirque, the slow-baked sea bass with pomme lyonnaise and what is it, leeks?
And leeks. And
Leek
Royal. So this is the new interpretation, but the original recipe was a paupière of sea bass with crispy potato and a bed of leek with red wine sauce. And
it became a sensation.
Oh, I did the dish for about 20-some years. And then when we redid the restaurant, Daniel, my chef, decided then we should not do that dish anymore. We are making a change. We are making full change. And I said, okay, then let's keep the soul of that dish. Let's keep the DNA. So we kept the sea bass, we kept the red wine sauce, we kept the leeks and the potatoes and made it in many different ways. And so it's fun in a way.
And this is one of the new versions.
Yes, exactly. It's one of the versions.
Well, in a way, it kind of mirrors what happened in the space that Restaurant Daniel is in, because it's in the space that used to be Le Cirque, but it's totally different. You had gone
Very
on
much.
To another to open up your own restaurant and then came back to this space.
Yes.
And then changed it totally.
Yes. 5 years later, after I left Le Cirque, I came back and changed it totally and moved Restaurant Daniel, where Café Boulou is now. I created Café Boulou and I moved Restaurant Daniel to 765th Street and Park. And I risked everything for it. I took the biggest credit we had to borrow a lot of money to do that. But I felt that was it. I do it now or never.
Was it important for you to have it reveal a kind of a character that reflected what you wanted customers to notice when they entered?
Yes, but also I think of course, the place was kind of historic for what it was before, but I wanted Daniel to be also one of these grand restaurants who remained sort of a classic in New York, but yet to be very much with my time when it comes to cooking and service and all that. So there is definitely the grandeur of the place, and yet there is the real genuine, warm, and I would say caring service and really where the attention to detail is very important. And, of course, the cuisine keep evolving as every year we keep evolving with it.
Well, you also had the opportunity to redo the kitchen.
Yes.
And was this the dream kitchen you'd always wanted?
Yes, and that's the dream kitchen CIO promised me. But then at the same time, I left CIO before I got my dream kitchen, and so I had to build it myself. But at the same time, the years at Le Cirque, I think, taught me a lot about being a New Yorker as well. I think CIO is really part of the greatest restaurateur here in this town, and it was really special to work with him.
My guest is Daniel Boulou, whose latest book is a magnificent-looking cookbook with photographs by Thomas Schauer, who's some of the most beautiful photographs I've ever seen of food in my life. It's called Daniel, My French Cuisine. It has essays by Bill Buford. It's published by Grand Central Publishing. We'll continue our conversation after this. We're back with Daniel Boulou, who is one of the most celebrated chefs in America, also TV star, and now owner of how many restaurants?
14.
14, all yes. Over the country and all over the world.
Well, not all over the world, but in some part of the world, yeah.
But you're in Beijing, aren't you?
Beijing and Singapore, yes. We have a Maison Boulou and DB Bistro in Singapore. And in Canada, I love Canada. And we have at Toronto, we have a Café Boulou at the Four Seasons. And then Maison Boulou at Montreal, at the Ritz.
And then in Florida and
yes.
Other parts of the United States.
Yeah, we have been down there.
Well, do the Chinese in Shanghai like the same food that we like here in New York, or do you have
Beijing,
to make adjustments?
Well, yeah, of course, and I think it's important to be. What's interesting is that it's a French restaurant, but like I say, I'm French, definitely. I'm French-American, and so that bring a little bit more of a. It's maybe easier to adapt down there and be understood. But sometimes you feel a little lost in translation there. But we try to have the team. I mean, cooking for them, for the Chinese, cooking is nothing strange to them. It's part of their life. They cook all the time. And now to make them cook French, that's a little more... of a challenge, but they're very good. I mean, I love Beijing, the team there.
How did you choose which recipes to include in this book, which, by the way, I should point out, is not only beautiful, but weighs a ton.
5.4 pounds.
Have you adapted restaurant recipes for the home cook?
Yes, no. So the book is composed of three parts. And the first part, which is about two-thirds of the book, is Restaurant Daniel Today. And it's the recipe collected over the last year, 2 years. And the recipe we do in the present, seasonal. So that was a year process where we could capture recipe from spring, summer, fall, winter.
So if I decided to open up Restaurant Leonard, could I just take these recipes and not tell anybody I stole them from you?
No, but what I will say is then first, I will say then you're crazy if you try to open Restaurant Leonard. And second, if you want to cook with my book, of course, I didn't want to take particularly, I mean, this is book number 8, and all the other book, I was conscious to make sure that the recipe was easy to do at home. This one, I wanted to make sure we didn't forget anything in the recipe. So, but it's so well compartmented that every step of preparation is well broken down. So you can really take a technique of cuisson and seasoning. You can take a sauce and you can take a garnish and you can make a sample dish for yourself out of that. So in a way, it's overwhelming to see that the recipe are complex, but it's very easy to break it down.
Now, when you also talk in this book about cooking at home. When you're cooking at home, are you more likely to just see what's in the refrigerator and put something together?
But
or
here,
do you try to go back to one of the classic recipes?
When I cook myself, I am much more spontaneous with what I have around me. My wife would go to the farmer's market and bring vegetable and I'll have a chicken or something. But here on the book, I made a section after the 80-some recipe from Daniel. Then there is the Daniel at home because I live right above the restaurant. And my kitchen is connected to my bigger kitchen down in the restaurant.
Have a dumbwaiter that just sends food up and down.
Yeah, we almost have that. But I want to have privacy. And then I have four menus from four regions of France I love. Alsace, Normandy, Provence, and Lyon. And I created four menus of home recipe and recipe I was attached to. So that's for entertaining at home as well.
These are the iconic French dishes.
And
Bill Buford helped you write narratives about the origin and preparation of 10 iconic dishes from pot-au-feu to canard à la presse, which, by the way, you're two or three wonderful members of your staff demonstrated last Tuesday in the green space for our locavores.
I wish I was there because I heard it was fantastic.
They were wonderful.
It was almost like a Broadway theater play.
And the best part of it was afterward I got to eat some of the duck.
Oh, cool.
So you say you like being spontaneous?
Yes.
Have you ever put anything together?
Cooking at home, I'm spontaneous, no doubt. Having made some home recipe, I think make the book very approachable. But the iconic recipe had nothing to do with home, and not so much nothing to do with Daniel the restaurant, but more had everything to do with me, Daniel the chef. And those iconic recipe, I didn't give the recipe in the book. I just wanted to cook with Bill Buford because I think he's a fascinating writer and is a very passionate and funny, and he loved to argue and he loved to create almost a doubt in you sometimes.
And he published one of the essays in The New Yorker recently.
Yes, absolutely, of some of the iconic recipe we did. And we spent 3 weeks together cooking those majestic dishes in the morning before the team come. And I wanted to cook with Bill, and I wanted him to, with me, do the same thing side by side, make the dish with me. And so we recorded that. We had 80 hours of video, and we recorded. And I wanted him to experience the dish and write about it. And I didn't care what he was going to write as much. I didn't care about if he was going to write the recipe as much as talking about the making and the origin and the history of a dish and how I was sometimes attached to it and how sometimes he was confused about why I was attached to it.
We have a couple of recipes on our show page from this book, the chilled white asparagus soup, the wild mushroom tart flambé, Now, the white asparagus, it has to be white asparagus?
It has to be French white asparagus. There's few things along the year on the menu who are not local, where ingredients will come from other destination, but they are so unique and they are so irreplaceable that I feel we should have them.
For the wild mushroom tart flambé, you use pasta flour, the double O style. Mm-hmm. And we just talked to Martha Stewart, who said that she's using it as a cake flour.
Right.
It's just starting to show up in the United States. What makes it different from other flours?
Well, I think it's a little bit more flavorful and also less processed. For the tarte flambé, it gives us a nice, crisp texture, because tarte flambé is not a pizza, and it has no yeast in it. And so it becomes a very thin crust bottom, and it worked very well with that.
Tell us about stocks. You seem to suggest they're the foundation of French cuisine.
Well, yeah, it is.
And sauces.
And often, you know, wonderful dish are wonderful because of their sauces, because of their stock around. Because it's just like when you make a clam chowder, and it's the combination of the brininess of the clam and the sweetness of the leeks and the cream and the potatoes. We'll bring all that together into a wonderful and concentrated flavor. And I think stock help concentrating flavor.
You quote sauce. Fernand Poin, who says, "It's the sauce that distinguishes a good chef. The saucier is a soloist in the orchestra of a great kitchen." And you mentioned that in your days at Nantron in Lyon, some customers would actually drink an old-fashioned sauce with crayfish stock. Was that good?
Sauce Nantua, absolutely. The quenelle, they will be serving a quenelle for you, for one person, in a large pot, and they were almost like, I would say, half a quart of sauce with it. And it will be put into a bowl, and the sauce will be around, almost like a bisque around.
One of your favorite sauces for cold shellfish plateau is based on ketchup. So do you have, if somebody comes into Danielle and says, orders steak, do you give them ketchup if they ask for it?
We do that at DBGB, and we give you ketchup on the table. But at Danielle, I think you can make your own ketchup, but I feel then I'm using it only as a savory touch, and sort of like bringing the sweet and savory touch. And that's about the only place I use it so often.
You have pictures of your daughter Alex in this book. Does she like cooking, or has she become an American kid? Is she more likely to put ketchup on her French fries?
She's American with a French upbringing. But she lives in San Francisco now. And so what's funny is that since she moved to San Francisco, the first week she wanted already to entertain friends. And I, by text and by email, she sent me picture at the market there in San Francisco. And I say, okay, buy this, buy that, buy that. And I build up recipe with her. And I tell her what to do. The last time she did the duck with figs and a salmon with figs and with some bok choy. And I tell her what to do on the phone. And then she do the step-by-step. She sent me the picture of her mise en place. And she does very well. She loves to entertain.
We have very little time left, but I wonder if you remember the first cookbook you ever bought.
Yes. It was a Gringoire et Saunier. It's a little book of all the basic ingredient for each classic recipe of France, Gringoire et Saunier.
Well, that was a little book. This is a big book, but a very beautiful one. Danielle, My French Cuisine, gorgeous photographs from Thomas Schauer, essays by Bill Buford. It is published by Grand Central Publishing. And Danielle, it's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you very much, Leonard.